You can't delegate digital transformation for your company. You and your executives have to own it. Executives need to engage, embrace, and adopt new ways of working with the latest in emerging technologies. And that's where we come in. Welcome to Embracing Change. The business world is changing at a faster pace than it ever has, and companies need to keep up. We interview the most interesting CEOs, CMOs, and other executives to talk about their challenges with digital transformation in their industry. This is Embracing Change, and this is your host, Gerardo Carrick.
Executives about how changes in technology and in consumer behavior are affecting their industries and companies. I am your host, Gerardo Carrick, Chief Digital Strategist at WSI Digital Boost. This show is brought to you by WSI, the largest network of independent digital agencies helping clients worldwide improve the return investments of their digital assets. So today we're talking about fintech and digital banking, and I don't mean just opening bank accounts and transacting online. Today, we will talk about how to grow a fintech offering that targets an audience that have never been in banking before, an audience that does not have a computer at home or even the latest mobile phone model. My guest today is Val Infante, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Marketing Officer of MyBamboo, an application that is quickly becoming the leading financial solution for Hispanics and other minorities in the US, a market that has been overlooked and underserved for far too long. Welcome, Val. How are you?
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be able to talk about our company and the efforts we've done and what we're looking to do as well.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being here. Let's talk about fintech. What is fintech, Val? Just to make it easy for our audience that might not be too aware of the term.
You know, that's funny. Every time people ask me, what do? And I say fintech, I just have always to explain it, right? So for fintech, or what we do, we're a financial technology company that offers financial services. So we are a technology company first that offers financial services, an array of financial services, and more specific into our target market and our goals, we have specific offerings for those people. But we're a technology company first.
Okay, so just for the benefit of our audience, the word fintech is a combination of the words financial and technology. It's a relatively new term that applies to any emerging technology that helps consumers or financial institutions deliver financial services in newer, faster ways than was traditionally available, right? So it's different ways of doing things that we all need as customers of financial services. Why is this industry so important, Val? What's happening in the world of technology and fintech that makes this such a relevant term? And I'm talking from the perspective of living in Atlanta, which is considered one of the fintech capitals of the world, right? I mean, there's so many new startups populating all the time, identifying new solutions. So in your words, why is fintech important?
So I think fintech is important because it's revolution, right? We've been used to traditional banking, and the way that people used to bank, that no longer is existent or applicable. We're in a new age where people want to have this basically level the playing field, like you said at the beginning. And from a standard banking platform, you can't do what you can do with a fintech, right? We can not only, you know, from a fintech perspective, you can just the process of being able to agile product offering, to be able to get to the people faster, to be able to open accounts for people faster, regardless of what you're doing, if you're in the space of processing payments, payment processing, or you're in the space of consumer, right, B2C or B2B. So I think fintechs, what they do is that revolution, and kind of separates the standard banking to the new banking world, and that's where we are today.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's incredible how fintech has reached all different aspects of our financial world, right? I mean, when we look at our financial lives, first of all, there's way more financial literacy today than ever before, right? Because there's so much information available for people. And I know we want to talk about financial literacy for the target audience of your company, but we know that there's more information ever than before, and that has brought up a higher financial literacy. And when we look at the world of fintech, you know, we can almost divide by sector, right? So we have digital lending and credit. That's one area of fintech where, you know, anything from companies like Kavach funding small business loans, or Credit Karma with credit reporting, mobile banking. There's no mobile bank right now that doesn't offer some sort of a mobile banking experience. Mobile payment, right? And even small mobile payments like Venmo, you know, peer-to-peer payments. Then we go to things that are a little bit more obscure, right? Like cryptocurrency and blockchain and how all of those technologies are changing the way we deal with money and trading, right? Some companies like Robinhood using AI trading to help users do trade better. So in which sector do you think there's it? Let me ask it differently. Is there an area where you see there's been more impact of financial technology than any others?
Yes, I think with the way that we process payments today from like I was saying before, from a B2B or a B2C is completely changed. And the way that processes are done has completely changed. So now you can do multiple transactions that would take basically 10 steps. By having a fintech in place, you really have built a platform that's scalable and can do hundreds of thousands of transactions in milliseconds. And I think that's the biggest thing from the payment sector that I've seen, is how fintechs have come into the game and really changed the game, and not only changed the game, but also set that level, that high level, the bar higher, right? We were used to doing things and then change comes and it's hard for some people. But I think this change and the position that where we're going with the fintechs has really cannibalized the old traditional banking and the way that we used to do process payments before.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I actually, you know, from a personal experience, I used to, as you know personally, but our audience might know because I don't have a native accent. I'm not from the U.S. originally, right? Even though I'm a citizen right now, but when I send money to family and friends abroad, I used to do it through a wire transfer. And that would cost me probably 35 yeah. bucks or 40 bucks, right?
Right.
Per transaction. I don't do it anymore. Because now I use a fintech, Wise, which used to be TransferWise.
We'll change
which,
that though.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. I mean, I'm happy to find better options. But that reduced the cost of that transaction to me by about 60%, right? And the point is, all of these new technologies are, as you're saying, are cannibalizing traditional banks and traditional operators in ways that it's been done maybe for other industries, right? Like Netflix has done it for the pay TV industry, right?
Right.
I think fintech is cannibalizing traditional operators in a way that it's changing customer behaviors. So I guess the next question to me, I'll be interested to know, from your perspective, are there any major trends in fintech that you see really shaping the market in the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think it's that adoption to cryptocurrency, and especially from a B2C perspective, right? Is it's a mixture or a mix between having the regular currency that everybody moves money on, but also the combination. I think crypto is so innovative, right? And it's been around for years, right? And it's how can we make it? How can it be adopted by the financial world? And it just keeps on coming back. I think right now where we're going is a world where you have your banking and you have the crypto and the way to do transactions, whether it's cross border or it's a peer to peer transfer, and in a crypto way, right? And making sure that. How do you stabilize that currency, or how do you move movement with an unstable currency at a certain degree, right? So I think the biggest thing or biggest challenge is to be able to get to a stable coin in order to transact in both things. And you should have an option as a consumer. How do you want to move your money? It should not be put on you or forced to move your money in a certain way. You should have options, and I think that's what crypto is doing for the for the world, honestly.
And what do you think is more important to look at cryptos themselves or the blockchain technology?
Well, that's a great question. So the blockchain technology is really what makes crypto work, right? So because blockchain technology can be applied to logistics, right? Really, mm-hmm. I think that's always been the thing. Well, is it blockchain or is it crypto or is it both? But to me, you gotta get blockchain to the point where you can figure out the way to operate it right, and be able to scale it at a massive volume. But you can apply that to so many different industries, and that's the cool thing about blockchain. I do also believe, from the currency perspective, that crypto is very important for countries that maybe don't have the same financial resources, or they're in a specific state in that country, like Venezuela, like El Salvador, right? So things like that, I think, is crypto adds it's a huge value added and lets people be able to be connected to the world.
Absolutely, that's so interesting, and I think one of the most interesting things to me about this whole fintech revolution is the fact that it's no longer about who's the biggest or most well-known financial institution. It's really more about being who's the fastest and most responsive to effectively addressing customer need, right? And I think what I find very interesting is that there's no one size fits all. In the past, you know, we would try, like in other industry, we would try to generate solutions that would be a one size fits all because it would be economically easier to manage.
Right.
But now with fintech companies, you can actually offer very niche services that fill the gap for a particular financial need, right? And at a much lower cost than those offered by traditional financial providers. And I think that's a very nice jump to your target audience, right? Because I think that's particularly interesting for the main audience that are consuming your product, which is the Hispanic and minority audience in the case of MyBamboo. Tell me a little bit more about what are the needs of this particular group.
So the biggest thing is that it's right there is a bit, if you look at LATAM or Latin America as a whole, I mean, Mexico, 50% of the people in Mexico are unbanked, right? That's just Mexico. And that's the highest rate. Well, Colombia, it's probably 65% or so. But you got other countries in Latin America where the bank rate is really low. And then when you come to the U.S., your thought process is like, well, you know, it's the United States, so everybody should be banked, or at least it's a high ratio, right? But when you look at the Hispanic market, there's probably around 80 million Hispanics in the United States that we know of, and there's about 35 to 40 million Hispanics today that are unbanked. And they're not unbanked, maybe they're unbanked because of multiple reasons, right? Maybe one of them is, hey, I just got to this country, how do I get accepted into the financial world, right? Then the other is like, well, I'm into this country, do I trust the banking system? Am I gonna be in some sort of list where people are gonna target me because I'm an immigrant, right? People forget how targeted immigrants are and how we don't have the same, I'm an immigrant myself, so how we don't have the same opportunities that other people do, right? And people mm-hmm. tend to forget about that. So when we thought about Bamboo, we initially thought it as a way to offer to bank people without financial resources first, and then also people that maybe were, regardless of their immigration status, they could have a chance at maybe being normal and do financial transactions, right? If you look at the day-to-day for Hispanics that maybe have been in this country for, let's say, 2 weeks, most people that have been in this country for 2 weeks that are people that just crossed the border, they will have a job, whether it's doing whatever they have to do, but they know that as soon as they get into the United States, they have to look at ways of how to make money, right? So they're making the money and like say, okay, well, I wanna buy something, right? Okay, so it's cash preferred, right? So you're always handling cash. Handling cash in this country is dangerous still, because people know that people like Hispanics that work these jobs where they get paid in cash are gonna be having cash, they're gonna be carrying cash. So I think that's like the first thing that they do, right? They get paid, they get cash, okay? Now I wanna send money to my mom in Mexico, for example. Okay, well, I have to go to a gas station. I have to carry the gas to the gas station. People already know, and we're humans, we like habit, right? We like routine. So we know that every other Friday, I'm going to be at that gas station. I'm going to talk to Pedro, and I'm going to send him some money to my mother in Mexico, right? So that's basically what they do, right? They go to the gas station or Western Union. They go to Western Union. They pay, you know, the charges for still for all these other remittances companies are still pretty high. So what we've done, just to kind of summarize our main mission, is basically we wanted to level the playing field for immigrants in the United States, regardless of their immigration status. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what we did. And that's what we're starting to do, right? With our cross-border remittances, right? So we enable, when you open an account with Bamboo, within seconds, you're in the financial world. Minutes, it takes 3 to 4 minutes to be in the financial world with us. You get an account number, a routing number, you get a digital Visa card, you get a physical Visa card, and then right away you can do transactions. You can send money to your mom in Mexico. It takes 35 minutes to send money, and our rates are 30 to 40% cheaper than any other provider out there. And we did this on purpose. We did it because we want to be able to not just cannibalize the market, but we also want to make sure that it's fair, that the rates are fair. We see the pricing. We see everything that's happening on the back end, and we just want to make sure that we're fair with the people that we're banking. Then we have the check cashing product that we offer, so you can cash a check on the app. We have over 120,000 cash-in locations where you can take cash in. You scan the barcode with your Visa or your Visa physical card that we give you, and the money will be there in seconds. And the coolest thing about this, I think, for me, from when I got to this country, is that I finally have a Visa card from a bank that says my name. I've been here less than a year or so. You know, I'm thinking about that population, our target market. And that's really huge for them to be able to have, you know, migrated to this country. And now I have an official Visa card from a United States bank with my name on it. I think that's huge.
Yeah. No, that is huge. And it's almost like being part of a community, right? Of a financial community. But there's going to be a couple of things that I want to talk to you about what you just said, because even in our prep calls, you talked a lot about leveling the playing field and talking about fairness, right? And I know there's something in the mission of My Bamboo that goes beyond just making money through financial services, but it's about offering a solution to an underserved audience, and there's a lot of purpose in what you guys do. But let me just paint the context, right, for our audience, because maybe not many people in our audience understand really some of the challenges of targeting Hispanics in the U.S. Right. So one of the things that we need to understand, and you correct me because you're the expert here, okay? But what, you know, one of the things that that are key for targeting Hispanics in the U.S. is try to understand that the value system that Hispanics use to make decisions is very centered around family values, right? We talked about sending remittances to Latin America, you know, to countries where we come from to help family, right? So, there's a couple of things that we can look at. So the first one is when we talk about education, right? Families will often sacrifice as much as possible to cover their children's advanced education above and beyond priorities like saving for retirement, right? So Hispanic families have less in retirement savings because they're prioritizing supporting their children for education, right? And in return, children, when they finish their education, support parents' needs when they become elder, right? There's that symbiosis in family, right? The other thing is family support. Families will often support members in need voluntarily.
Yes.
Not giving them a loan, but it's ongoing financial support, right? Through economic hardships. That's something that is very, very particular to Hispanics. And a very good example of that is what you just mentioned, which is remittances back to Latin America. Mexico alone represents $26 billion. Of remittances. And I don't know if many people know this, but it's the number one source of income for Mexico, above tourism and gas, right? Money that is sent from families to their to the members in Mexico. The third one is borrowing. Hispanics, you mentioned that we have a very strong work ethic, but we lack the experience with credit and financial institutions, so we are normally not willing to, either we don't have a credit history, we have limited financial education, and we underutilize or have limited access to credit, right? So those three factors create a community that, as you said, is very is in a lot of need for solutions that really solve some of their problems, right? And it's also open up for predatory lending, for other types of problems, right? I know I spoke a lot about this topic, but is there anything that I said that you say
you're right on point with this. It's exactly what you see, and then not only that, I mean, I think it's almost 2% of the GDP growth that for Mexico that the remittances from the U.S. Are taken into account. And if you think, so Mexico, right, everybody's like, okay, Mexico, but then you also think about El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua. These people send 30-40% of their income, their monthly income, back home to help their family members. And I know it's always a business, and you know, people always say business first. You gotta make sure that you can survive, and we completely understand it here at My Bamboo. But we're also more of a volume model, right? We want to keep our rates and our costs low, to be able so our customers can maximize their dollars back home, right? Because at the end of the day, like what you were saying, for us, it's not only revolutionary, doing a revolution for this target market, but it's also helping the communities grow. Banking with us is the first step that we want to do. Our roadmap is pretty robust, and we can talk about that later on the areas that we're going to get into. But the ideal is to help people grow and concentrate on financial literacy that I think a lot of companies forsake on their target market, right?
Yeah. So Val, what would be the challenges of targeting this group?
So I think the first thing is financial literacy, right? Understanding they really, our target market, there's people that obviously understand what a bank account is. There's people that don't. So we have a really good department here on the data side, and they do a really good job understanding what the behaviors are, what they do, what they don't do. But I think right now is for them to understand that from the first thing, once you come into our platform, is trust, right? That's the main thing with this market is trust. Mm-hmm. Making sure that they trust the brand, that they trust where they're putting their money in, right? That's, I think, the first challenge that we've had to overcome. And I think, actually, in a weird way, COVID helped us change the mindset. So I would say number two is change the mindset of these individuals. They're used to doing routine activities, and they're used to doing the same thing over and over again, right? So with COVID, I think for our target market, it put that into perspective, like, hold on a second, there's a chance that they can close the doors, there's a chance I can't go to a bank, or there's a chance that I can't go to this grocery store, or there's a chance I can't send money because I can't get into the grocery store, right? And then it made them kind of switch to, like, maybe I should do things digitally, right? And I think that's where we come into play. So that would be number two. And number three on the financial literacy side of it would be understanding that as soon as they open a bank account with us, or they have access to automatically a routing number and an account number, and they also have a Visa, a digital Visa, ready to go. I think they don't grasp that yet. And I think for a lot of them, it's like, wait, now I can call my boss and say, can you do a direct deposit? I have it right here in my app. Like, how do I do this? It's all here. There's no paper, right?
So let me interrupt you there. How do you educate this audience that is normally working maybe two shifts, that might not have a computer at home, might be accessing you through a mobile phone? And maybe the mobile phone is not the latest model. I mean, how do you go through those challenges?
So I'm glad you brought the phone types. So I would say 85% of our customers have Android phones. So what we did when we first started growing, our biggest obstacle was, wait, there's tons of people downloading the app, but there's not a lot of accounts being open. We're like, what's going on? So we had this account opening process that was more designed for an iOS or an iPhone type. And what we did, we kind of put the technology and we tailored it for our customer needs and for our customer phone types. So the way that we reach people, I don't know if you know this, but I think 55% of the of Hispanics, they're leading the actual charge on smartphone usage. You know, I think it's super high. So we're leading
that. Of course.
So
higher than other demographics by, you know, by far.
By far. And they're adopting that really well. So everything that we do, every touch point that we have with you is through a smartphone, because we don't have a website, right? But everything that we talk to you is through the phone, through an application, right? And then we're in all the social media platforms. And something that we did, we went through a lot of marketing companies, and something that we ended up doing is making our content in-house. Everybody that works here has gone through what all of us went through. And I think that's the biggest thing, is building that culture that understands our customers' needs and wants. And that's what we've done so far here. Everyone that's here understands it, has that passion to help immigrants. And you know, they have people that are still coming into this country, and most of our employees refer their family members because they know it's a need. So that's what we did. And in that sense, is we have a lot of our own how-to videos. We have a pretty heavy online presence on Facebook and Instagram. We do a lot of giveaways. We just want to show them, hey, this is how things are done. And that's just the beginning. I think we're going to be getting more into traditional marketing pretty soon as well.
Yeah, I was reading in preparation for this conversation with you, right? And I was looking at what are the challenges with the Hispanic millennials, right? And I managed to come across a study made by Bank of America, where they talked about the fact that there's 9 out of 10 Hispanic millennials that have financial stress, right? Versus, and that's very high versus other demographics, right? And also, a big cause of that financial stress, almost 3/4 of them are providing financial support to their family. Right, compared to maybe half of non-Hispanic millennials, right? So that's another source of financial stress. And also, and I think this is something very related to financial literacy, half of Hispanic millennials said that they don't have a financial role model or anyone to turn to for financial advice. And I think that's key, because a lot of what we do and how we behave financially has to be taught. Right, it has to be, and we learn it at home, we learn it from our parents, you know, all of those behaviors about saving, all of those behaviors about credit, etc. Right, so it's interesting the fact that the financial literacy is such a mismatch with Hispanics, and it's interesting that one of your strategies has been addressing that, right, educating. And I guess my question is, at what point is enough education? I mean, how far can you take a financial literacy for this segment?
So I think right now, right, our focus is on for them to understand simple things as right, what's a Visa card, right? We start from ground zero. But as we go, we want them to understand that, okay, having a bank account is the first thing you can do. But what about when you want to buy a car? You should not be paying a 25% APR or 30% APR. You should be more, what is an APR, right? So I think our thought process is to take them from an infancy state, from a financial literacy, right, perspective, to an adult stage, right? Like, okay, we're going to give you banking needs, but then we're going to be offering you loans. Then we're going to be offering you a way to maybe buy your first car. Start small, buy your first smartphone. Let's transition you to an iOS maybe, or a $700 Android phone. But that's the first, it's like small steps, and understanding that and being able to get them there, that's kind of what we're working on, right? So microloans, then from there, let's help you buy your first car. Let's help you buy your first home. And after that, let's help you save for your kids so they can go to college and have that chance that you never got, right? And I think that's everybody's dream when they come into this country. My daughter or son graduated from a college in the United States. We immigrated in this country, you know, 20 years ago, and now this is what we did. Our hard effort paid off.
Yeah, that's the biggest price.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And I guess that talks about building not just a financial app, right, but building up a slew of services.
Right.
For this underserved community, right?
That's correct.
And by the way, is this just, are just the Hispanics being underserved? Do you see My Bamboo helping maybe other underserved communities that might be rural communities or other type of demographics?
No, yeah, no, that's a great point. So what I wanted to do from the company, and I think from the founder as well, one of the things that we wanted to focus on is that target market, because we saw huge space there. But ideally, you know, we take the same course of action with any other immigrant in the United States. It's just understanding their needs as well, because they're pretty similar, but it's just getting us there, right? So I think ideally what we wanted to do is focus first on this specific market, but the long-term vision is to be able to, you know, to tailor to every immigration needs, right, or immigrants' needs. But I think we started a little slow in understanding what we were, especially the sector that we're in, and how to get them to interact with the app. But the next steps is to grow to that extent for sure.
Okay. So let's talk about purpose and fairness. You talked a lot about being fair and leveling the playing field, and you know, even in our prep call, I mentioned to you that I was very impressed by how purpose is such at the center of everything that you guys do, right? So is that something that it's ingrained in the culture? Is that something particular to you? Where does it come from?
So for me, it came from me initially, in terms of you know, before this, I used to work for St. Jude. And I used to, you know, support all the national direct marketing efforts. And then once we came to Bamboo and, you know, started building Bamboo about 4 years ago, it really is such a passion to be able to help, and not only help but grow. And then we've built a really cool culture. The people that we have here, we have close to 75 employees. If you look about 8 months back, we had maybe 15 employees or so. Mm-hmm. So, but every employee that has here has a purpose and has that passion. And that's really what we've been focusing on, is building that culture. Because I don't think companies and great products are successful without the right culture. So we've been really keen on growing the culture. Mm-hmm. Establishing ourselves. What are we as a company? What do we want out of here, right? Out of this. So I think right now, everyone that we put in place in Bamboo, they, you know, they go the extra mile to make sure that we get to where we need to be.
Fantastic. So we talked a lot about digital, right? And of course, the subject of this conversation is digital transformation. But how important is offline, non-digital efforts for targeting and addressing the needs of this audience?
Yeah, I think that's really important, and I think that's where we are today. You know, we understood the digital market and we handled it pretty well, but now it's getting more into that traditional market, into that community, right? And not only into the community, but how can we help the community as well, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of nonprofits. There's a lot of non-Hispanic nonprofits that need help, and they have a lot of people that go to them for guidance in a lot of different areas, and I think we can definitely be evaluated in the community approach, and I believe it's super important to be able to get to where we want to be, right? We don't all just, you know, we just don't. I mean, right now we're growing pretty significantly, but ideally we are the next Chime for Hispanics in a way.
The next what?
Chime for Hispanics.
Okay. Well, That's incredible. So, do you think that the future of financial services is totally digital. Do you see still a need for physical banks in the future?
Wow, that's a really good question, right? Because I feel like we've been able to, in a way, fintechs have benefited from, we have benefited from having banks, traditional banks, because there are sponsor banks, right? That's the model mm-hmm. for program managers until you actually get licensed as an official bank. But I don't think it's gonna go away. I think digitally, I think people still miss that human interaction. And we saw it even with COVID, right? There's a lot of people that got used to work from home and they love it. But there are some like myself, I love interacting with people. I love seeing, touching people, right? So I think that especially in our target market, that face-to-face is still very important. We went to an event a couple weeks back here in West Palm Beach. It was called Fiesta del Pueblo. And we got to meet a lot of some of our customers or some of the people that I wanted to, you know, they were in the middle of registering. And just having that one-on-one with them and being able to talk to them, from our perspective, we're digital first, but we're going to be face-to-face in a lot of different areas. We're not going to become a traditional bank, but I want to make sure that we have presence in every city where we have a lot of our customers in.
Excellent. Well, that's fantastic, no? The fact that at the end of the day, I think one of the biggest learnings with digital is that we're using digital to solve human problems, right? And it's not about generating a disconnection. It's actually to facilitate connection.
That's right.
Right. So it's to make things easier, to automate the things and to make things, as you said, level the playing field, reduce the cost of some of these transactions, but to allow people to connect in more meaningful ways.
It's access, right? It's about access.
It's access.
I think that's mm-hmm. what it is, yeah. That's the main thing, it's having access. Or not knowing. A lot of them didn't know, wait, I can do this? Really, me? Yeah, you can. It's easy.
That's fantastic. Okay, so we're getting to the to the end of the podcast. So I have a section that I always find very fun, which is a rapid fire questions, right? So I'm going to ask you a question.
All right, let me get ready though. Hold on, no, I'm just kidding. Let's go.
It's supposed to be fun, okay? So, first of all, what is your favorite brand?
My favorite brand?
Brand.
Oh, right. But I'm supposed to do it fast, right? Jeez.
Whole Foods, okay. All right. Very good, very good. Bitcoin, boost or boom?
Boost.
Okay. TikTok or Snapchat?
TikTok.
Got it. That's fun. All right. Airbnb or hotels?
Airbnb.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree with you. And will we go back to the office or will we tend towards remote work?
I'm in the fintech space, but office.
Office. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. That's interesting. That's an interesting choice.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Val, this is it. Thank you so much for your time. This was a very fun chat to have with you. I want to thank you for your time today, and maybe we can have you in a follow-up session at some point in the future.
Sure. I'm all for this. I love it. I love getting the word out there and show people what we're doing. So I appreciate the opportunity to be on your podcast and showcase what we got.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much. Have a good one.
Thanks. Bye-bye. You too.